Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
Episode 375 of the Roguecast, recorded May 31st, 2022. Kids on speaker bikes.
I don't know if you guys know this. This is our 375th episode.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Is that why confetti is leaking out of the ceiling?
Yes, that's why.
The cops asked. If I'm not mistaken, we started this in 1973?
That's correct. Yeah, 1973. I was two.
Yes. And we would...
I was doing some time traveling.
Yeah. Right. And we had to invent the technology for podcasting.
For podcasting, yes.
When we originally started, of course, it was just a radio show with an old-time disc jockey in the style of Wolfman Jack, and you'd be like, this is Randy Land of the Roguecast.
A lot of people don't remember the funky 70s music that opened the Roguecast. It used to open the Roguecast, but it's something you can find on YouTube.
I'm trying to forget it, honestly. Green Lantern, Green Arrow comics we're going to be talking about today, talking about the social ills of the world.
Yeah, you remember the episode we spent the whole time talking about heroin? That was weird. Speedy.
We had to let people know that Green Lantern's ward is a junkie.
Green Arrow's ward is a junkie.
Oh, whatever.
Green Lantern doesn't have a ward.
They're the same.
He has a ring.
Same dudes.
Because Green Lantern's around a ward, has he?
No, he would entrust.
He had an underage girl he dated.
No one would entrust Hal Jordan with a kid. Are you kidding me?
Still,
theoretically, he was supposed to be the responsible one between him and Green Arrow.
Are there any Green Lanterns who have, like, kids?
No. It doesn't seem like.
No. I guess
isn't
not.
Isn't that weird?
That is a little weird.
Yeah. It's a little weird, but, like,
I'm trying to think. Are we wrong? Are we missing something obvious?
Like Sinestro has a kid. There's some people. Like, doesn't Kilowog has kids or something, right?
No, Kilowog doesn't have
Kilowog
kids.
Kilowog doesn't have
doesn't
kids.
Doesn't he?
No.
He's like a bachelor.
I thought I'd seen him with some little younglings.
No,
those are all the Green Lanterns he gets killed.
That's all the Green Lanterns.
If you watch the cool Green Lantern cartoon, Green Lantern the animated series, which I promoted the other day, the one that the cool character that Kurtwood Smith voices and that who dies in the first episode or two, he was a Green Lantern with a kid and a wife.
Huh? Was his wife named Kitty and was his kid named Eric?
What's that a joke about?
70s show.
Okay.
which ties back to our opening. That we started in 1973.
I didn't watch it, dumbass.
The only kid that I can think of from animation is the future where Jon Stewart and Shiera had a kid. And he was in
He's a Hawkman.
He's a Hawkman.
It's the old superhero thing. Once you introduce kids, then, you know, people are like, oh, then younger readers can't relate because it's, you know, a married couple and there's kids.
Where's my Guy Gardner with his
You want
brood.
Guy Gardner to have a kid? Oh,
Guy
my God.
Not have kids.
No. Nope. And so this is a perfect example of how it's irresponsible to be a superhero and have kids.
It's irresponsible to Guy Gardner and have kids.
Yes.
You tell that to Superman.
He's missing. He's dead right now.
Luckily, his kid ended up with his powers.
Technically, all the Justice League is dead right now, Black Adam, who is not a Justice League member.
Right. I'm going to advance the podcast forward to actual content.
This is content.
Oh, okay.
I'm content with it. let's talk about the stuff we got in the store this week. We got the Tales of Zadia RPG, which is the Dragon Prince RPG.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
Anybody who by chance hasn't seen that, Dragon Prince was one of the other animated shows from the people who did Last Airbender, and it's very good. It's their fantasy series.
Yeah, and they have a board game from the guys who do Boss Monster and Call to Adventure, too.
Yep. Right on.
Yeah, so we got a bunch of Pathfinder. Knights of Last Wall, which is the book to how to play knights.
Right. They specifically are knights who, when I was making the sign, they, like, fight werewolves or demons or something like that. There's, like, a specific order. I think it has lots of stuff on knightly orders, but there's, like, a specific one that's, like, that's their foe.
I mean, that's the order I would want to be involved in.
Yeah, it looked cool.
We got Abomination Vaults, which is one of their early adventure paths and one big hardcover.
Yep.
Because they have a big dungeon crawl.
Yep.
We have the deluxe version of that, too, which is really, really cool. It's, like, leather cover and stuff. We got Shadows at Sundown, which is a new adventure, which has a cool-looking spider on the front of it.
Yeah, it is. It looks like a horror-ish adventure.
Yep.
Made me think of The Thing from Carpenter.
Yeah. We got Starfinder Drift Crisis, which is sort of it's an interesting book. Basically, the Drift is like their hyperspace.
And it's broken.
And it's run by, like, this god Triune, which is like the triple god.
Yep.
And the notion is that I sort of started flipping through it, and there's basically here are several possibilities for why drift travel is broken and how you can fix it. And then there's like 20 scenarios of like, here's adventures you can run.
Yeah.
And sort of like, here are how you can, basically because it happened, a bunch of people were stranded in the Drift.
Mm-hmm.
A bunch of people were kicked out of it and like stranded in other parts of the galaxy.
Sounds like a tough break for them.
Yeah. It's rough.
Oh, I see. The adventure is supposed to help with this. No, that's a cool idea.
Yeah,
all the stuff that kind of story arcs, the adventure issues that come from that. That's a cool premise.
So that looks really cool, and I guess they're going to be doing adventure paths and stuff set in this timeline. Sort of, this is their ongoing story, which is pretty cool.
Oh, okay, so it's going to stay busted for a little while.
Yeah,
yeah, that's cool.
They do in the book their solutions like, hey, if you want to solve it, here's how you can do it. Also, you can just leave it broken if you want to.
Yeah,
so it's kind of cool.
That's neat.
We got the game Spirit Island back in. This is our first time having it. This is a, I believe it is sort of an anti-Catan, essentially. You are playing the island. You're trying to kick off all the people who have colonized your island.
So instead of trading, do you ransack each other?
I think you are the island. I think you're
The island is trying to evict the colonizers. Island is trying to evict.
Oh, okay, okay. Yeah. Well,
it'd be like Krakoa
too.
From the X-Men being like, get off.
Yeah. Get off my island.
I like this idea. Get
up.
Fun.
Get on up.
We've got the Sentinels of the Multiverse Definitive Edition. This is another game we've had, but this is one of the big deck building games, superhero themed. Yeah. This one is like the big definitive box. It's got all the characters and stuff.
Nice.
We got the Fizban's Dragon Minis, which are very cool looking. They have the super boosters that come with like the guaranteed come with a dragon.
Yep.
There's the Elder Brain Dragon you can buy separate, and there's the Draco Hydra that you can buy.
Yeah, and it looks like it's a Hydra Tiamat kind of thing, at least as designed. With the 5 Tiamat heads and some of them like sprouting secondary heads and stuff. It's very awesome looking.
Oh, also looks like it has octopus tendrils.
It might.
Sure.
I guess.
We have an Eisner display set up in the store now. The Eisner Awards are the Oscars of comics.
Yep.
And we've got one in our all ages section and one in our bestseller section. So you can check out stuff and what was nominated. We've basically got about 15 rotating selections on there.
There's a lot of good stuff on there.
It's already been like selling a bunch of stuff, and so it's exciting to see people finding some of these stories.
Grab bags are back, so we will probably those will probably be gone by the end of the summer, if not before. But we have Marvel, we have DC, and we have mature readers. They're $10. You get 10 comics. If you get one, there's no duplicates. If you get more than one, it's likely you'll have some duplicates.
Like, if you get two Marvels, going to get some duplicates. If you get two mature readers, probably going to get some duplicates.
Probably. Not for certain, but very, very likely.
Yeah. But it's a very good deal. A guy was in the store yesterday, and I heard his kid was trying to find something. It was like clearly his first comics day kind of thing. And he was like, you can just go ask him that. Mm-hmm. And I heard what he was wanting to say was the kid had $10 and was trying to figure out what was good to get. And I was like, well, if you want. If you got you want to get a Marvel or a DC pack, you're going to get 10 different comics. They'll just be random, later. It could be later in the series and all that stuff. But I'm like, 10 comics for $10, pretty good deal. Mm-hmm. And so that's what he ended up getting.
Cool.
And I think that's pretty ideal. Like, if I could, as a kid, get that kind of thing, that would be a great way to do a little sampler.
I did that a bunch. They grocery stores I did, they packed comics where I got them from, some comic shop. I think Book Source or some kind of
they had a deal with them or whatever.
Yeah. Remember we built these originally as three packs, and we were inspired by that because they were in the clear bags, so you could see the outer and the inner.
Yep.
But you had to move it around to try and see what the middle one
was. Yep. Yeah, and good luck trying to do it.
That's the tradition. Now you can't see. It's blind. You can't see it. Blind bag. You like blind bags.
It's true.
It's very true.
Finally, we have an Indie Press reorder coming in. For those who don't know, that's our indie RPGs.
Yeah, which have become a big thing for us in the last several years. These are basically all the alternatives to Dungeons & Dragons and the other big, the biggest games.
But some of these are our favorite games, Dread and Dungeon World.
And every time we get it, we always get a restock. We always get some new games. So this time out.
And some of them are also, by the way, sometimes they're just incredibly weird and cool. Mm-hmm. But what was the one, Randy, where you're fighting? It's you are playing is it a Chinese restaurant?
Chang'e, yeah.
Yeah, you are essentially there's a little mini sim game trying to run the restaurant and balance that. But also, what is it? Is it demons that are attacking?
At night you're fighting hopping vampires and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah, stuff from Chinese folklore. And that's the kind of cool games that you'll get in here.
Or also the Goths versus the Visigoths.
Yep. Yes. and so, yeah, this time one of the notable things is we're trying to get some more solo RPGs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which, a lot of the solo RPGs, what they look like isn't so much obviously there's not the character interaction and stuff like that, but a lot of times they look like sort of choose-your-own-adventure. Sometimes there's creative elements, in Thousand-Year-Old Vampire. I don't know if we're getting that one in. It's a bunch of writing prompts. It'll, ask you to talk about your character's history. It'll say, oh, this is when you experience one of your darkest turns, what happened, and So a lot of them have this creative aspect.
It's kind of guided journaling as much as anything else.
Yeah, absolutely. The one that most interested me was called, this time was called Dwelling. That's a solo RPG where you're like entering a haunted house with like a dozen creepy rooms. And they have ghosts, and you also, I think, have something like amnesia in it. So you do some choose-your-own-adventure elements. You will like also figure out who you are and what your relationship is to these ghosts. And you will like draw the ghosts on the pages they're in. Like when you confront them and see them, you do art. And they suggested, like, oh, if you don't feel like you're, like, you don't like drawing or don't feel talented at it, you could collage create these creatures and stuff like that. And so, yeah, you will make a cool, like, Indiana Jones Grail Diary-looking thing out of this that tells a cool story. It sounded like a really neat idea. Cool.
Yeah.
I know we are also getting in The Very Good Dogs of Chernobyl.
We're really excited about this
one. A dark premise. Yeah, everybody knows about Chernobyl, the Russian reactor that melted down, nuclear reactor. But this story imagines is a sort of a sci-fi bent on it where dogs have that have survived there. I'm sure this is based on true stories of, because animals and plants like have actually come to sort of thrive there. Despite almost the high radiation levels, there's not, in some cases, as much mutation, I guess.
And a lot of it, I mean, and I don't, this is based on fact, the Chernobyl miniseries. It showed basically Russians hired to round up all the animals and kill them.
Oh, geez.
So, yeah. That was definitely kind of a thing. Well, so.
I don't know how, like, I have no idea if how that relates, like, if this game has that degree of, like, seriousness. But it is about, like, some of these animals have, like, psychic powers and things like that. Some of them know about humans and some don't. It seems like Watership Down, but yeah. Instead of rabbits on, like, sort of English hillsides and stuff like that, it is in the kind of, there is, like, Lovecraftian, like, I think it's, like, the idea is almost like there's been dimensional tears from this meltdown, and so their dogs are trying to protect the land from these things that are trying to get through. Some of them have powers and some don't, but you get to play a good boy doggo.
Yep.
Sounds very Beast of Burden, in a
yeah,
way.
I
gathered from their description that it has a little bit of that darkness in there, yeah. Like a combination of both adventurous and darkness. What else?
Cool.
There's one called Mutants in the Now, which is a straight-up homage slash serial numbers filed off style
yep,
game
yep.
For the old Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and Other Strangeness.
After the Bomb.
After the Bomb was a later miniseries. After the Bomb, I think, was a follow-up thing
okay,
to it.
Okay.
But basically, there was a Ninja Turtle game from Palladium in the 80s that one of the funnest things in it was the character creation. They had these giant tables of like 100 plus animals that you would roll on. And part of the fun, and they showed this in the sample, was getting a weird animal like a goldfish or a guinea pig or something like that, and making it into something that like once mutated, like the turtles, became this badass. So you end up with some kind of like samurai guinea pig, and he'd be like drawn all swole and have like a leather jacket on with spikes on it and stuff like that. And some of them had psionic powers. And you could choose different origins, like, you know, whether you were created in a lab and you escaped from them and you're on the run, or whether it was, like, the turtles or something like that, or even, like, experiments by aliens, like... And this game is a recreation of that, clearly, of that sort of playing style, but with, you know, the decades of thought, game design thought that have come since then,
yeah.
They streamlined it a bit, they improved it. There's analogs to these things, so there's not, like, Krang in it, but there's probably somebody like Krang. There's not Bebop and Rocksteady, but there's probably somebody really like Bebop and Rocksteady. Anyway, this was actually one of the RPGs that I fixated on as a kid in the 80s, and it had cool art, and, like, basically you created these cool mutant-human-badass hybrids, and I think that's going to probably be very cool.
We also, Dave, I know there's a solo game called The Broken Cask that's about running a fantasy inn.
Yeah, yeah. You know what's interesting? When I was reading up on it and finding out a bit more about it, the sign I've got here, this is, I think, pulled right from their marketing. They said, create your inn and innkeeper persona. Hire staff. Earn gold. Expand your inn. Trade at the market. Send heroes off on adventures and much more. And... again, it's got like some choose-your-own-adventure elements and randomized tables that generate problems. You have to decide, oh, do you want to call in, you know, your staffer, the bouncer? They have Gork the Bouncer or Baronhild the Cook. And they're like, oh, but the cook's no good with customers. And so you have to make decisions like who to send and what limit, you know, what resources to use. But it was also described as a kind of a chill game. Like, they want to do something the equivalent of, like, kind of a cozy RPG.
Yeah.
So that, you know, you can play this in a relaxed state. You know, it's fun for people who like those sim-like games that aren't, like, super high pressure. And I'm like, I think these solo games are going to be really cool. I'm looking forward to like making like a whole subsection of this once we feel like we've got enough to do it.
So are a lot of these like games just solo that can't be played with multiple people?
Well,
is there...
That's all of them. There's about three or four of them. We just kind of noticed that trend.
But I think to answer your question, Nick, I think that is the case. I don't think you could play Broken Cask with two people or five people. I think it's the kind of thing you might, if you've got like a friend or a partner or something like that around, you might be like, oh, what should I do? Or do you have an idea? Like kind of do a little input or whatever. And some of them may be like more better at it than others.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think they are meant to be solo. That's what's actually kind of cool in a way is that they are, you know, it's dedicated, built into the premise. So it's not like one of these things where it's like, well, we made an RPG that you can play solo, but good luck. No, it's like meant to be. So.
And then there's one other thing I want to mention, which is the Bad Decisions.
Yeah, which one is that?
Which it's a GM-less horror-themed storytelling RPG for 3-6 players. During play, you become the hapless characters. The audience shouts, "No, don't go in there!" To
so you're playing the dumbasses.
It says, in traditional role-playing games, you often wonder the smartest, safest thing to survive, but we like our heroes curious, irresponsible, and extremely mortal. The whole point is to get yourself killed doing something terribly idiotic. Over the course of a couple hours, our ill-fitted characters are placed in a situation ripe for foolishness, such as ghost hunters exploring colonial Williamsburg or teens trespassing a dinosaur mini-golf. You take turns narrating, rolling dice, and making bad decisions until you are no longer just hinting at danger. Danger is chasing you through a cornfield with a machete.
That sounds like some of the manic chaos of a game like Fiasco, but with a specific horror genre in mind. And what's funny is I don't really like the slasher genre and stuff like that. But as far as, like, lampoons and stuff of it, like, parodies and stuff, sound pretty entertaining. That actually sounds pretty fun.
And I guess the game shift is that basically you use liar's dice, and anyone who gets eliminated, it's a modified liar's dice. Anyone who gets eliminated, and it's down to two people, and one of them is the final girl, and one's the secret mastermind.
Oh, interesting, yeah.
It just sounds fantastic.
Yeah, a lot of these, and you know, I'm sure we've mentioned this before, but a lot of these are actually one-night games, or can be played in one night. Sometimes you can do a campaign, but they maybe work as well or better just as a one-off sort of thing.
Right.
Like, maybe play it every once in a while. And, yeah, that seems like perfect for that kind of thing.
And then we got some popular restocks. The Bluebeard books, which is about the guy who famously had many wives and they all wound up dead.
But yeah, but from what I gathered about that one is that like the angle of the game is almost like a feminist perspective.
You're playing the brides.
Yeah, and it's like sort of about like also creating your own story and trying to escape this death house.
Yep.
Honestly, I feel like broadly people who like crime and true crime podcasts and horror and stuff like that, I feel like it's like the game for them.
We got Cats of Cthulhu, which is what it sounds like.
Yes, Kitty's protecting us from Lovecraft, long before the dogs of Chernobyl did, by the way.
Rebel Scum, which is the sort of deliberately anti-fascist Star Wars
game. Anti-fascist Star Wars game,
Ryutama, basically the Miyazaki travel game.
Yep, they sometimes call it Miyazaki meets Oregon Trail, because there's a bit of a sim element and a supply style of that one, too. But it's another...
Can you die of dysentery?
You can run out of food and get cranky. Because it is also it's a lightweight game. It is in its way a cozy game as well.
And then speaking of traveling game, there's a Wonder Home, which is about traveling animal folk.
Ah, nice. Yeah,
they got that back in. So, yeah, it should be a good restock.
There should be like you have been devoured by a Totoro.
I think I'm gonna straight up get that game dwelling. I want to draw ghosts and do the ghost experience.
That's pretty cool sounding. Cool.
All right, moving on to news. There is a Speed Racer live-action series in development. It's going to be on Disney, or no, it's on Apple Plus. And J.J. Abrams is on board as executive producer.
Okay. Apple Plus, you said, right?
Yep.
Apple Plus has a pretty good reputation.
Yep. I like the 2008 movie.
I wonder what it's really like. Is it building at all on that?
No, it seems like it's its own thing.
But it'll probably certainly be somewhat heavily influenced by that, just like some sort of version of a hyper wild cartoon of a real world.
So the guy who's doing this, he worked on the sort of dark and gritty Perry Mason series at HBO.
Yeah, I remember that.
He's worked on Westworld, Weeds, Friday Night Lights.
Oh my gosh.
This does not
sound like a guy who does a Speed Racer.
The Last Ship, Snowpiercer, Snowfall, Shut-Eye. He's done...
These are all serious-ass stories.
Yeah, so he's sounds like maybe
But like, it's a good pedigree.
Yeah.
Now I'm betting I'm betting it's going to be light. I'm betting it's not going to be dark. Maybe a little dark, like maybe some character
hooks. This is going to be a Speed Racer by way of the Batman.
If I could suddenly hum the music to it, I would.
Something in the speed.
So I am only a casual fan, yes, of the Wachowski sisters' Speed Racer. But I think it's got a lot of neat stuff in it. And, like, it's... I actually kind of think that could be a fun idea to do it. Take it maybe just slightly serious enough to, like, have some ongoing character threads and things like that. But have, like... really cool driving scenes that are like the kind of outrageous, you know, crazy, yeah, buzz saws and ramps and all this kind of Viking dudes or whatever. Remember those? Those are like Viking, yeah, yeah, drivers.
I,
right?
Bet they're not going to go that crazy, and I'm curious to see how that would work.
But we'll see. I don't see why you do Speed Racer and not go some stripe of crazy.
I agree. But we'll see.
I am betting that this guy wants to do something that is more wild and imaginative, or maybe something for his kids. Or something. Yeah. I don't know. Nick, I know you're a fan of Speed Racer 2.
Yeah, I love, right, the movie. I love it for its bonkers nature.
Can work, or do you think it's a fool's errand?
No, I think it can work. I don't know what the through line will be.
Westworld with cars.
Sure.
Car world.
I mean, they're making a stupid television show out of the game Gran Turismo. So,
are they?
Yeah, they are.
Wasn't Gran Turismo the one that was like all the realistic stuff?
Yeah, it was a super realistic like car racing game. So,
sure.
Why can't you have kind of a high concept, crazy speed racing? The car could like catapult itself, right?
We've already talked about the guy who's doing the what's the old PlayStation 1 crazy car game?
That's Twisted Metal. Yeah, we talked about that last week.
Twisted Metal seems like it's
got good pedigree. It actually sounds good. Like, we talked about all the casting and stuff.
Yeah, all the casting is insane.
And this guy's pedigree actually seems like a step up from that.
Yeah,
so much so that I can't even quite imagine how he's going to do something as goofy as Speed Racer.
I'll be curious to see when we start getting like casting things. Like, if they are going to go for like Racer X and...
I mean, they gotta.
I mean, they do, but...
You'll never get a better pops.
How can you be John Goodman?
Yeah, you won't.
His pops is amazing.
You can't.
Maybe he'll reprise his role.
Give it up.
Maybe so. All right, and then we have the Willow trailer, the teaser for Willow on Disney Plus.
Yeah.
Which...
A sequel that's come a little late. I believe the original was like 86 or 87.
Yeah.
And so this is the first official follow-up. There were some books, by the way, by Chris Claremont.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah.
I think they were one of those weird things where from what I... At one point I was like, oh, I'd kind of like to read these. I like Willow. And I remember reading that they are like pretty decent, but it's kind of weird dark fantasy. Like, you know how Claremont like had that dark streak in his stuff? If you ever read his like fantasy graphic novel Black Dragon.
Yeah, you were telling me about
it. It's really quite dark. And like it didn't feel like the adventuresome spirit of Willow from what I saw. I don't know, I haven't read him. But this definitely looks like it's in that same vibe. Time has passed. I believe it's the exact amount that would have passed in real time, mm-hmm, right? It's supposed to be like probably like 30.
I think it's
like
cool that it basically looks like it's a new adventure. It doesn't really have anything to do with the old one other than
Will. I think it may, though. I think that isn't she.
Well, like,
she the
Laura Dannon must be grown up and probably the Empress.
Probably. It looked like that was who that was supposed to be, right?
I mean, there was so much stuff going on, I couldn't tell.
There looked like a princess throne.
I saw, like, I did see some brief glimpses of brownies.
Yep.
There's some creature that is not a dragon or any of the other things. It looked cute. It looked neat. Yeah. It was coming up out of the water.
And Willow's a wizard now.
Willow is, like, the real freaking deal, and he's got a cool glowing staff.
And he's like the Gandalf of...
their lands or something.
What was their lands called? I forget.
Oh man, I don't know.
But he's now become the
was it just for his village, or do you mean like the whole lands?
I think he's become kind of like the
I mean, I feel like he should have kind of become an advisor, to the little girl grown up.
And this is still Ron Howard, right?
I believe so.
Producing, at least.
Oh, is he producing?
Yeah. I don't think he's... Does he actually like do any hands-on TV shows?
I don't know. I feel like he might have directed some Arrested Development or something.
It would feel right, but... But yeah, there's got to be somebody who's like the son of Mad Mardigan and was it Sorsha?
Mm-hmm.
I think. And the thing that I was happiest to see was the actress who played his wife in the village. And by the way, you know, we're talking about people not having kids, but Willow was a family man.
Yeah, he was.
And that was a kind of a neat thing to have a character who had a wife and kids.
Willow Upgood or Upgood?
Upgood. Upgood.
No, anyone who has a wife and kids is inherently boring.
That's the truth. I just try to avoid them. You know what else with it I thought was kind of cool? One of the neat things in the original one was, like, you know, when they're, like, sending Willow out of the village, it is the equivalent of, like, Frodo and Bilbo leaving and stuff. There's some derivative elements to it. But they're like, we need to send somebody to protect him. And they're like, send our best warrior, so-and-so. And this cool dwarf guy stands up, and he's got his spear, and he's like, I will go. And I was like, oh, this guy's a badass. And they had small roles, no pun intended, but they were cool in it, right?
I just remember the guy was like, no, not you. We need you here because you're awesome.
Yep, and then they tell him, like, it was like the mayor or whatever, and they're like, oh, you have to go. And he's like, you're going too. But those guys were cool. I saw some other warrior that was, like, clearly from Willow's village or whatever, who looked cool in this one.
Yeah.
So I'm pleased to see that tradition. I was actually thinking there were so many kind of, like, casually kind of trashy roles for dwarf actors in those days. You know, like, always kind of, like, playing a goofball. That in Willow, they were actually taken completely seriously.
Yeah.
His relationship with his wife was played completely serious and very sweet. And so, like, that was a little early progressive thing, like, long before Tyrion or anything like that.
Yeah, it's true.
So, anyway, it's a fun trailer. I think y'all liked it.
I did. I don't have a huge fondness for Willow. I like it, okay. But this looked good.
You know, one of the things I liked best about Willow is it's got a lot of energy to it. And part of that was Ron Howard's directing, and part of it was James Horner's music. James Horner, who did so many great film scores, like for Aliens and Wrath of Khan and stuff. And sadly, he died like 10 years ago or something like that. So, but they did they reorchestrated his theme for this. And hopefully they'll get a good composer. Because I definitely, there's a lot of cool themes in that. But yeah, like, there's not a lot to go on in this. And I don't, like, love Willow. I like fantasy stuff, but Willow was always a little bit schlocky, a little bit derivative, too.
Yeah.
But it's a good time. Like, it was, like, there were not... Actually, there was a decent number of fantasy movies, but not many good ones in the 80s. A lot of schlocky stuff like Beastmaster and
Lady
stuff
Hawk.
Like that. I've never seen Lady Hawk.
You never seen Lady Hawk?
I know, it's weird, right? I've also never seen Legend.
I've also never seen Legend. But that's not weird, because I don't like fantasy as much as you do.
Among the ones that kind of, like, and some of these were lower budget, but, like, Kroll is in there.
Kroll?
Willow, I feel like, sort of like Dark Crystal probably counts.
Don't forget, You're a Hunter from the Future.
I'm going to forget You're a Hunter from the Future. That one is going to be one of those examples of ones that you want to not remember.
No, he rides a bird.
He does use, like, a dead pterodactyl's wings to glide as a hang glider.
Can Kevin Pollak come back?
I don't know. Can he?
He's still around.
All right. Yes. I give it my...
As a brownie.
I give it my approval. Kevin Pollak, you're allowed to appear in this.
I forgot he was a brownie.
Yeah, he was. Yeah. He was great. Yeah. I don't remember the other brownie's name, but...
Huh.
But yeah, like, I'm looking forward to this. I'd like to see another good fantasy thing. Wheel of Time ended up being pretty good.
Still need to finish that.
No idea if the new Game of Thrones stuff is going to pan out.
Still a lot of the Lord of the Rings is coming, Game of Thrones is coming, this is coming.
Second fantasy revival.
Yep.
Willow, among them, will at the very least be probably one of the more fun ones, I think.
Yeah, so. I think so too. The rest of the news we have is all Star Wars.
Yep.
Because Star Wars Celebration happened and they gave us a whole bunch of info.
Yeah. This is, you know, the genius way, we've talked about this many times over the years, of how the Star Wars sort of merchandising machine works. It's like, if you've got any fondness for Star Wars, even if you've decided, oh, I'm done with Star Wars, or just had enough, or...
Like Randy did a couple of years ago.
I remember the third time I was done with Star Wars.
But, like, I hit that, too. I'm, like, I'm just sick of it, or whatever. I say that, and I'm, like, I was the person who, like, I liked most of the sequel trilogy stuff, or at least to some degree. But I'll get just done with it at times, and then they'll, like, have like three trailers are hit, or like, and like, plus Obi-Wan is out and all this stuff, and I'm like, oh, you know, like, a few of them will end up hitting for me, and all it takes is one, and then I'm like, oh, maybe I want to get that new Star Wars video game, oh, maybe I want to buy that graphic novel.
Do you feel like Al Pacino in Godfather?
The one that I've never seen, yes, I do feel like they keep pulling me back, but there's a certain thing where I'm like, I like being pulled back to Star Wars sometimes. It's not always a bad thing.
No.
So we've got Star Wars Skeleton Crew, which we talked about in previous weeks. It's the one that's sort of riffing on Amblin 80s entertainment, like kids in the galaxy.
Mm-hmm. We didn't watch a trailer for this one.
There's no trailer for it yet.
It's just an announced thing.
So we know...
Skeleton Crew is a cool name.
The thing is, they haven't even decided... We don't know for sure whether it's post-Mandalorian or High Republic era. And I think what got confused is there's the High Republic era kids show. But I believe this is post-Mandalorian era.
Yeah, so. I think this is Mandalorian. This is the one that John Watts is doing, right?
Yes, I think that's right. Yeah. So Jude Law is in it, and then a bunch of kids. So I don't know what Skeleton Crew means.
So Dumbledore is going to be in it.
How kid are the kids?
8 to 10? 8 to 12?
Oh, pretty young. So this is definitely not going to be like the Scooter Gang or whatever from
Fett. No. It's younger than that.
Okay. I mean, that's a fun enough idea. I can't quite picture Star Wars doing that genre, the kids on bike genre, but I also don't see any reason why it wouldn't work. It like seems like a fun premise. It also seems like it'd be a fun premise for an RPG.
Yeah, I mean, if they're discovering, you know,
they should just call it, by the way, kids on speeder bikes.
Are we thinking that maybe he is like a Jedi and these are younglings, or
maybe? But I don't think so, because Star Wars Young Jedi Adventures is the other thing I got confused with this. When the rumors were flying around,
yeah,
and it's set in the High Republic, and I can't tell whether it's live action, or animated, but it is going to be, I think it might be animated, but it's younglings as they learn the way of the Force.
I feel like is it possible that Jude Law, by the way, is the bad guy?
It's possible. I'm wondering if Skeleton Crew is like a Oliver Twist style. They're like they're a criminal crew or something like that.
Yep, that'd be cool.
Well, I know there was an animation show coming up that they announced that was like Ahsoka as a young kid.
That is Tales of the Jedi.
That's an anthology of original shorts
coming in fall.
All right, I'm sick of Star Wars again, y'all. I'm done. I'm done with it.
Also, they just announced Star Wars Vision Season 2 is coming in 2023.
Can't wait for that.
I need to watch the previous one.
It's really good.
Had you not watched any of it?
I guess I should watch it now, since Obi-Wan kind of worked pretty well for me. I like the idea, by the way, that the kids might be a little Oliver Twist, little hoods.
Yeah, me too.
Star Wars has a good tradition of scoundrels. Yeah. Like, that's some of their best, funnest characters. I'm hoping for that, even if that's not what it is. They could also be the kids, the equivalent of the Goonies kids who are trying to find treasure to save the spaceport or something like that.
Young Jedi Adventures is an animated series set in the High Republic area following younglings as they learn the ways of the Force.
Yep. Okay.
That is cool.
There was no further announcements. We know that Ahsoka is coming.
So, I had a friend who was commenting that it seems like most of these announcements are essentially not like wildly ambitious conceptually. Like, they're not sort of necessarily pushing the universe forward.
Mm-hmm.
But like some of them, like that one Skeleton Crew does sound like it's, you know, it's not like about the Skywalkers. It doesn't seem to be particularly about Jedi and stuff.
Right.
So, there are lots of ones that tie into characters we know, like Ahsoka and Obi-Wan and Andor and all that. But it seems like at least some of these are doing new characters and stuff, too.
Well, I guess they also announced, I know they announced that Hayden Christensen is going to be on Ahsoka as well. Hayden Christensen is back, people.
it seems like he's been kind of doing a little bit of the press stuff and some videos and interviews and things like that. And you know, this is one of those ones where, you know, honestly, even if I don't end up liking what they do with him, I'm glad for him.
Yeah, I am too.
He deserves a second shot after being directed by Lucas.
Well, I think I've seen something with him, and I think it was Ewan McGregor basically saying like they feel like the generation that grew up with their prequels is now starting to enjoy Star Wars, and they feel like that they're getting a bit of redemption because all they had was the fans who were older who didn't like
the mean old fans. Yeah,
the fans like me.
Yeah, now they're like, oh, thank God those people are dying off. All right, what else we got?
And then we got two teasers out of that. So we got the teaser for Bad Batch Season 2, which I know Nick and I both really love Bad Batch.
Yeah, right. Bad Batch being like the Clone Wars, basically a follow-up to Clone Wars, right?
Yeah, but they were they're like clone commandos who, because of their sort of mutations,
didn't get
66. The chips didn't work.
And they all, like, one of the guys is a bruiser. He's like a big tech type, and one of the guys is like a tactical genius. One of them is like
Hunter is Rambo.
Yeah,
yeah. It looked kind of like the crew in Predator or like a GI Joe team or whatever. Like a wide variety of specialties and personas,
and they're all sort of protecting. And a young girl who is named Omega, who is actually a female clone of Jango Fett.
Oh, interesting.
So she is kind of important.
X-23.
Yeah,
and I know she's sort of important to the who were the people who did the clone,
the Kaminoans.
Especially important to a few of those, so that they have been chasing them as far as we know.
Bad Batch is basically A-Team in the Star Wars universe.
It is, and it's amazing.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's really good. I really like it. The second trailer has that. There's some really good stuff in season 2.
And the trailer made me audibly gasp because there was a character from the video game Republic Commando.
Yeah.
Oh wow.
Shown in there, and I am excited to see if that means there's one in there. Hopefully, at least another or two.
Did you play Republic Commando?
I did. I enjoyed it. But those Clone Commando guys are awesome in that. And
nice.
I can't wait to see what they do with them.
And then we have the teaser for Andor, which seems to be, as with like Obi-Wan and some of theirs, a little more expansive than just about one character. This is about the birth of rebellion.
Yes.
Yeah. You may remember Cassian Andor as dying in Rogue One. but he was like the handler, right? For, what's the name of the
leader
character?
Of the group. He was
yeah.
Jyn Erso.
Right, but she was the point of view character, but he was the guy who recruited her and stuff. And
well, he's kind of, he was portrayed as kind of a ruthless, like, he will do anything that justifies the ends of the means of getting the job done. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, I know the opening scene begins with him, like, he kills a Confederate of his rather than risk them talking to him if they're interrogated. And who's the actor who plays him?
Pedro Pascal. No. That's Mandalorian.
Yep. We'll look it up. But, this is a fun-looking trailer. Like, it looks like it's going to have a little bit of that Rogue One vibe of, like, kind of dark times. It's him as a kid in that opening scene, we think? Is that the deal?
Maybe. We're not really sure.
It's some planet that looks like it's, like... I don't know. I feel like this is not, like, your thriving Coruscant planet.
Yeah, no.
Diego Luna.
This feels more like an outlying... A village as a planet.
Yeah.
And somebody starts ringing these, like, warning bells, almost like Lord of the Rings style... Because it looks like there's some sort of imperial inspection or...
From what I understand, it is sort of like an imperial occupation of his home planet. And it's sort of him kind of...
He's probably going to become... He's going to become radicalized.
Yeah, it's about him and his compatriots going up against the Empire. And that sort of will probably feed into the bigger thing because Mon Mantha is involved.
Yep. I've heard that she's going to be like a fairly major character.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. I like all that stuff.
They also outright said that this is going to be, I think, a 2-season show.
Oh, interesting.
And said that K2S, or whatever his name is, K2SO4. Is not in the first season.
Right, I've heard that.
I've heard that too, but the he'll probably show up later.
He'll probably be a stinger or something.
Yeah. But that makes sense to have him as a fun thing for season 2, but in season 1 to... focus on the character, and I'm sure there's going to be lots of new characters.
Oh, yeah.
Instead, Alan Tudyk will voice a bird somewhere.
I think it's a cool idea, and I do like that character, and I felt like in Rogue One we got a snippet of him, and expanding on probably the best character in that movie in a lot of ways. I mean, I liked a lot of them, but most of them were kind of one-note-ish.
They were lightly sketched out.
Cassian had a lot of meat on the bones that they could explore, so this feels like a natural thing to do.
Yep, and a fun time. Like, it's, you know, I mean, arguably all Star Wars stories are kind of war stories.
Yeah. And is it weird that I'm...
War Star Stories.
Is it weird that I'm excited that they're going to expand on Mon Mantha? I think she's... In the first, in Star Wars 1 or 4.
Finally, sexy Mon Mothma.
I mean, she was a pretty important. She was, like, leading everyone.
Yeah, but it was never clear. Like, it never felt like she was anything. She was like, she's the leader of the rebellion. And I'm like, she was just this lady giving a briefing.
Yeah, but I want to see that explored on, like, what made her the leader.
Right. And behind the scenes, this is an opportunity for them to do, you know, like, Star Wars, you know, struggled, especially in its early years with. Although it had strong roles, like, for Leia, it was still a male dominated franchise.
Yeah.
And so they've been getting, you know, stronger female characters over the decades, and this is another opportunity to take one who's, like, kind of a small character and, you know, show her at her peak, right?
Yeah,
show why she got to be essentially a supporting character general later.
And it should go well, because Star Wars fans are notoriously tolerant.
You know, you are, I assume, casually referencing the Obi-Wan thing and some racist responses to...
Well, and also Last Jedi. And
the official Star Wars page had to say, please don't be racist.
Yeah.
That's not great.
No. Star Wars has a lot of toxicity in its fan base. And I think part of it is just that it's such a big fan base.
Yeah.
When you remember that, roughly half the country voted for Trump. Yeah. And then you're like, oh, and if, like, most everybody likes Star Wars, then about half of those people...
But I kind of want to shake all those people by the shoulders and, like, what the hell movie are you watching?
I want to freeze them all in carbonite.
Like, are you missing...
They'll probably survive the freezing process.
These are the people who are like, I'm voting... I'm rooting for the Empire, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But anyway, I'm looking forward to this. I did not expect to like the trailer as much as I did. The Star Wars stuff on TV has actually really worked for me for the most part. I don't think any part of it that hasn't worked.
Yeah, even though I like ended up a little bit soured on Boba Fett by the end of it, it was a pretty good ride.
It's got a lot of fun stuff in it.
It does.
Yep. And like that, even that last episode, even though it went on too long and stuff like that, I'm like, it did have a Rancor rampaging through the streets of Tatooine.
It did.
With freaking Boba Fett riding it.
That was pretty cool.
And beating up what were they? Were like super droidicas or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah,
scorpion droids.
Yeah, it had a lot of good stuff.
All right, we're gonna take a break for a second, and then we're gonna come back and talk about comics for the week. We are talking comics for the week of Wednesday, June 1st, and we are halfway through the year.
Yes,
so you guys are working on your best stuff, right?
You know, I started a list of best of and then promptly tapered off of it, but I've been filling it in occasionally when I think about it, and I think I've hit most of the stuff that I've read that I've liked.
Did Randy, brain fry you or something, and now you're following in his footsteps?
I just wanted to try it out.
Okay.
It is not easy for me because I don't have any regimented thing, and I do it on my phone, which is hard to type on. And I like anytime I list something, I want to put the credits on it so that I start to get some of the newer writers and artists' name in my head. But it's good too for precisely those reasons.
I have a spreadsheet.
Randy has a spreadsheet because he's a wacky.
How long have you been doing the spreadsheet?
Oh, I just started the spreadsheet this year actually.
Oh, okay.
But so, I've been making lists for a long time.
Well, no, I know that, but I was like, how the spreadsheet?
The spreadsheet's new because I did it last year at the end of the year. I was like, oh, this has been easier if I'd done it throughout the year. And so
spreadsheet is
it.
Now the evolution of.
Yes. Now my best stuff is ever evolving and always.
So do you have different columns for writer artists?
No, I don't have all that info.
Oh, okay.
I have the books.
So
what issue numbers came out this year?
So what you're saying is Dave is actually doing more than you are.
I'll go back and fill at the end of the year. I always go back and look what the creative team was and what the stories were. So.
Wow, sounds like real fun work at the end of the year.
It is fun.
If you're a list person, I guess so.
I am a list person. All right.
So let's talk about what's... let's see what made the cut this week, if there's anything that made the cut.
It is a lighter week, but there's some interesting new stuff out there. So one thing, Jonathan Luna, who is one of the Luna brothers, who has done... What all have they done?
Their breakouts were Sword Girls... what was that? Ultra? Was that
Ultra? What
was
Ultra,
And what's the one with the Alex and Ada that we all like?
Alex and Ada, yeah. As with sometimes solo, sometimes with his brother, they've done some pretty good, thoughtful, different genres: horror, sci-fi, sort of slice of life, relationship stuff. Their superhero one, their breakout superhero one, was kind of a Sex in the City for superheroes. To this date, by the way, it is one of the only comics I've ever gotten my sister to read, and she loved it. Because the dialogue that usually that they were able to do in their character stuff is always really good. So this one is kind of odd, though. As much as they have always been sort of, I guess, kind of progressive in their themes, they're big. They grew up in the 90s, I think.
Yep.
And so Jonathan Luna is doing a one-off tribute here to the Image comics of his early days, specifically Wildcats.
It's not just Wildcats, though. There's Youngblood, Cyberforce, Wetworks, all those are kind of... This is not just Wildcats.
Okay, so some of those went over my head, but the main team that this time traveler runs into is kind of Wildcats, right? Or is it not?
It's sort of, but I mean, the Scottish woman who transforms is more of a Youngbloody type character.
Okay, that's fair. That's like Feral or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
So as a basic premise, you have a person who's what is she in the present? It's the year 2022.
She's in 2022, and she's like a bounty hunter type.
She's like a badass with guns.
She's got bandoliers all over her in the Image tradition. Two guns. She chases a time traveler back to 1992 and meets up with the superhero team Phalanx,
which she knows in her time that they're all older and stuff like that, and different. Some of them haven't survived and stuff, and. But she's also kind of in awe of them, and that's no doubt representing a little bit of Jonathan Luna himself. If I got to go back and meet them, right? And it's so funny it's weird for me to see nostalgia for Wildcats, which I'm, not to burst anybody's bubble, but I don't think it's a great comic. cool Jim Lee artwork and stuff like that. Definitely an X-Men knockoff kind of book, but But you know what? And whatever you grew up with is always going to kind of loom large in your imagination.
Yeah. It's interesting. Did you guys read the introduction by Jonathan Luna?
Yeah, no. I did not.
About him as a 13-year-old living in Sicily as a military child, and he had to order comics to get them. So he ordered, and Image had just started, so he ordered the first issues of Wildcat, Spawn, Youngblood, Cyberforce, Wetworks, Shadowhawk, and Savage Dragon.
Wow, that's
and
quite the...
And they were, like, hugely impactful on him.
Yeah.
Which is kind of cool. I mean, I was in that same boat. I mean, Spawn was definitely...
Sure.
I actually enjoyed this more than I thought I would.
Yeah,
It is a riff on 90s superheroes. We're debating whether or not how much we think is there's a goofiness to it. Like, that he recognizes how sort of silly it is.
Right, and I came down on, I think he's fairly sincere in this. I don't think there's too much that's meant to, like, lampoon them.
I just think the woman growing naked out of her costume is a nod to, this is weird, funny stuff.
I guess so, but it's like, it's just not treated kind of like comically.
I think it's his kind of ability to do the over-the-top stuff that those 90s comics did.
Yeah.
I think it's just kind of his tribute
to
that.
That's over-the-top in a different way. Like, it does seem satirical. It's just that the way it played out wasn't particularly satirical. Like, it didn't have, like, a darkly funny thing. It almost seemed more like just like a Warren Ellis comic or something like that, where somebody who grows giant just happens to get naked by it.
I don't know. It
wasn't actually as pervy, also, the way it was drawn. It wasn't, like, as, like, sexy time as,
like,
a lot of old
Image
comics.
And I think
one of
them makes a joke as, like, we never get her costume right.
Yeah. I don't know. The accent that the Scottish character has is sort of way over the top, and I feel like the ending is a sort of like a very sort of deliberately maudlin thing. I don't know. It felt like a loving homage to the Claremont stuff that inspired, like, Wildcats.
Right.
But yeah, I feel like it's a loving homage, but I do think there's some sly winking humor in it.
Did we all kind of like it though?
Yeah. I actually kind of liked it. I
even though I don't have a particular fondness for that era. It is somebody's sincere, you know, spin on that.
Yeah.
And the Jonathan Luna is a talented guy.
I always have a semi-love for Wildcats, because I did enjoy that so much that I watched the cartoon.
Oh, they're heroes, not zeros.
They are heroes, not zeros.
Everybody immediately go to YouTube right now and look up Wildcats cartoon intro.
Do not do this.
Definitely do it.
Better or worse than some of the intros like the Fantastic Four animated series Man.
The Wildcats song is both terrible and an earworm. So if you go to YouTube, as Davis instructed you, it will be in your head for a week.
What? There's lots of stuff on YouTube. They can go and listen to Henry VIII.
Oh, God.
They can go...
Russell, I dare you to listen to the Wildcats theme song.
Do it.
Another big thing from Image this week is The Closet, number one. This is a 3-issue miniseries from James Tynion.
You might know him from such giant breakouts as Something is Killing the Children.
I don't know if it's for you guys, but this was definitely kind of my pick this week.
It would be my pick.
Yeah, it's my favorite thing I read this week.
The writing is really good on it.
The writing is phenomenal.
It's actually... it's a kind of dark horror story in the sense of, like, you know, that reminds me of those Stephen King-like stories.
I was going to say, this felt like something out of Night Shift or Nightmares and Dreamscapes.
It's a story that begins at a bar where a guy, he and his wife and their young son are moving soon, and he is out to getting supplies, and it's clear there's friction going on with he and his wife. And he's kind of dragging his feet getting back to it. They're arguing over packing and all this stuff. Yep. And so he is making excuses about how, like, you know, he needs to go get some duct tape or whatever. But he's really, like, using an excuse to get drunk at the bar.
Yep.
And there's a really good conversation with the bartender. Like, it's super... Everything in there is interesting, including the bartender's advice on, like, trying to convince his kid, who is having nightmares about, like, something in the closet. The bartender has his suggestion on what to do.
It's an interesting suggestion.
It's an interesting suggestion. And you get to see a sort of a half-hearted attempt at it. But, like, the fact that it's grounded in this, I'm not going to say necessarily dissolving marriage, but troubled at the very least.
Yeah. Oh, it's dissolving. He seems like a piece of crap.
Yeah, he does not seem like a great guy. But it's all, like, all the scenes are fascinatingly written. It's very compelling. The art's good. It reminded me of the kind of artists that, like Sean Murphy and the kind of people that Ed Brubaker works with.
Yeah, this artist is fantastic. He keeps working with really good artists.
And that the creepy scene when the kid goes to bed that night is extremely creepy. I don't know what's happening in it, but it's very creeping me out.
Oh, he worked with Declan Shelvey on Bog Bodies, newer book.
All right, okay.
This guy's name
artist?
Yeah, Gavin Fullerton. He's really talented, just visualizing these kind of eerie and creepy scenes.
Yeah, there's it's really well done. They let the moment breathe when scary stuff is happening, so that it unfolds a little bit more the way manga does, mm-hmm. Horror manga, and the scene kind of like is, you know, it's almost like it's moment by moment as like the kid is like looking into his closet and trying to see if that's a shape moving in there and stuff. So highly recommended.
Also worth noting that Nice House on the Lake number 9 comes out this week, just as we're talking to James Tynion.
Yep.
That is just a 12-issue series,
it's just
right?
12-issue series,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're nearing.
Yeah. Justice League Road to Dark Crisis number 1, this is the anthology series of stories about what the characters are doing now that the Justice League is dead. So it's like there's a...
You say anthology series, but it's just an anthology one-shot.
Anthology
right?
one-shot, sorry, yeah. Yes. So there's a story that's... they're all little short stories.
Yeah, but it's all a lead-in, ultimately, to their big summer event, right?
Right. There's a Nightwing and John Kent story. There's a Pariah story, who is, like, the big bad. There's a Flash story.
I really enjoyed the Green Lantern and Aqualad story. Yeah. I thought that one was the best.
Randy, you had an interesting point in this about, like... So this came out of a Justice League story. That was, like, the prelude to this, where the Justice League got killed, destroyed, yep. seemingly. Yep. And they're in this, the heroes that weren't among them are discussing their loss, and you were kind of enjoying the fact that they were talking in terms of kind of realistically that they've seen superheroes go and return.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not something like, and then they're like, sometimes, you know, like, if this does happen, it can, you know, and sometimes it doesn't, but sometimes it does, and so that's just a fact of their life.
Well, I like the way they contrast, especially the first story, where Nightwing is sort of the old hand who's like, yeah, they'll be back. And John Kent has not experienced this before and is a little more freaked out by the whole thing.
Right. And there is a there's a scene where they're thinking about some of the people, you know, generally more like what really are supporting characters, like Alfred and some other people who've died, who, at least as of the date of this, have not come back. And yeah. So there's a sense of, like, you can't just assume it, but it may be the case. Anyway, but yeah, that's I kind of appreciate them front-loading it with that knowledge.
Then we've got Neverender, which is by our friend of the store, Devin Kraft.
Yeah, yeah, and that's a sci-fi thing.
And Jake Eckes, who has also been here before. These are all friends of the store. This is a story in which basically they're space stations, and they manage to gather a lot of the resources in the space station. So down on Earth, you're sort of like suffering. And up at the space station, you get ranked by fighting hand-to-hand outside the station in zero gravity. And that's how you sort of get resources and fame and that kind of stuff. It's an interesting setting. Kraft's art is really good. If you're looking for sort of some weird dystopian sci-fi, definitely want to give that one a look.
Yeah.
Speaking of dystopian sci-fi, Dave, I know you got the Cyberpunk Blackout in front of you.
Yep, there's just we didn't get a ton of these, but if you've been in that Cyberpunk mode... What was the thing last week, by the way? Fox and Hare or mm-hmm, something like mm-hmm. that? This is more in the specific Cyberpunk 2077 future and is about, like, sort of... it's specifically about a guy who's, I think, kind of this loser character, but kind of what happens to him... I haven't had a chance to read it. When the city that runs on so much, all this power and stuff, has a blackout. And you see, like, what happens in a cyberpunk world when power is short. Which is a cool idea. I just thought that was a neat basic hook. So I'm looking forward to checking it out.
Yeah. We've got a reprint of Moon Knight number 1.
Yeah.
This is the first one with Doug Mensch writing, Bill Sienkiewicz on art. Early Bill Sienkiewicz, but yep. still really
It's the
good.
First of his own series. And it's pretty cool. Like, I was just flipping through it, and it's got, like, was it Bushman in there? Cool. The Sienkiewicz art looks cool. You know, I'm sure there's dated stuff. This came out originally in 1980. And you're getting an exact reproduction, so this is one of those that has, like, the letters page or whatever. Yep. It's got old-time ads and all
it's got
that.
Hostess fruit pie ad.
Yep. but yeah, if you want to kind of see what Moon Knight looked like right at the dawn of the character, pick that up.
Yeah, for sure.
And also just check out, enjoy some cool art from Bill Sienkiewicz, who's gone on to become one of the great legends of the industry.
Then we've got continuing issues of Little Monsters and Strange.
Yep. I want to mention Jim Henson's storyteller, Shapeshifters. This is the fourth issue of that miniseries. And this one is super creepy. It's a folktale from Belize, and it involves a kind of a, like, shape-changing vampire in it. It's really cool and creepy, and it's about a little girl who knows that her, like, this woman in the marketplace in their village who's, like, creepy and doing weird stuff every day, is, like, coming into her house at night and basically feeding on her mom. Hmm. Oh, it's God. A darker story than most of these Jim Henson ones have been. A lot of them are very melancholy and sort of have darker elements, but this one, like, was actually, like, kind of horror, almost on a weirdly closest to the James Tynion book this week.
Is the old man still telling his dog these stories?
That's how it always is.
That's a really disturbing story to tell a dog.
The dog interrupts multiple times to comment on, like, he's very concerned about these. He says, what's going to happen to the girl's mother? Will she be okay? And so they treat it, they you know, it's not played, it's played like a dark folk tale.
Okay.
And it is like one of those things where it's like, there's interesting weird folk tale ways to kind of deal with this kind of vampire-like creature, but
what's the dog's name?
I don't know.
Okay,
no, dog.
Is his name Dog?
He might be.
He's like no dog.
It's not Sprocket. That's
no
that's,
dog. The mom is gonna die. Brace yourself.
But yeah, the international vibe of all of these stories has been a lot of fun, and it's been just cool to see creepy and fun folk tales from like Ireland, Belize, and I'm trying to remember where.
Also, just a talented artist across the board. They get such spectacular.
Yeah, I most of these artists I don't know. Yeah. In fact, I'm not even gonna say most. Every single one of these artists has been unknown to me,
also,
but all talented.
A reminder: these don't sell so well off the shelf. We usually get them for the collections. But if you want one, then you're gonna have to fight Dave for it.
That's true, probably true.
Or you know, ask him to order it.
They also had a new DC YA graphic novel called Galaxy. This was the
Galaxy, the prettiest star, right?
Yeah, yep. And that was the this was the one of their offerings on Free Comic Book Day was a preview of this. I don't know a lot about it, but it sounded like a bit of gender exploration for teens, because it's about like an alien princess who has to take shelter on Earth, you know, like she's in exile or being hunted or something, and it's in Metropolis. But she's essentially hiding out as a boy. And I don't know where the story takes it, but clearly the gender stuff is baked into it. And it's got, like all of these things, it has really good-looking art. These have all done well for us. Mm-hmm. This whole line does well, and I generally have good faith in it. So I haven't read it yet, but I'm betting it's pretty good.
There's also Usagi Yojimbo Origins Volume 3, which is the Dragon Bellows Conspiracy, which is early stuff that's got... I think you noted, Dave, Zatoichi the Blind Swordsman, I think, appears in here.
Yeah, and this is like a... This has, like... I think it may have those, like, ninja bats, maybe, and I'm not 100% sure on that.
You may be right.
But it's one of... It was the first big epic story he did that was a big multi-parter about, like, you know, attempt to overthrow, like, the Shogun or something like that. Yep. I remember that he makes friends with a samurai in this, and that other samurai has to serve, like, an evil feudal lord.
Yep.
And there's, like, this... Almost like this samurai riddle that's like, oh, who's the greater samurai? The samurai who faithfully serves a good lord, or who serves a bad one?
Yeah.
And according to samurai ethos, as weird as it is more noble to do something as to serve a bad lord because you are doing something that's hard. Like, and I'm like, it's such a weird cultural thing to think about.
Well, it's interesting.
And the fact that they addressed it so well in this and how painful it is was really cool.
What's interesting is also that Stan Sakai mentions that this was his nod to James Bond movies.
Oh, that makes sense, because there's like infiltration and stuff.
Yep.
The dragon bellows, I think, are specifically referring to black powder weapons and explosives that like the person is gathering for the coup.
Yep.
Anyway, like if you just randomly wandered into this one, it's going to be a badass storyline. I'd start at the first one if you can, but if you just wanted to like try out Usagi at a cool peak, this is a good one to try out.
Also, the coloring is really great. This is the new colored version of it, which is great. And as they've been reprinting in single issues, there's six original covers that are by David Peterson, aka Mouse Guard, and they are really, really
good. He always does some of the best covers.
Yeah. Excitedly, Superman Son of Kal-El Volume 1 comes out this week in hardcover. This is... I know Dave ranks this above Nightwing. I rank it just below. It is some of the best comics out there. It is about John Kent.
It's Tom Taylor, who we've sung the praises of so often that we have Tom Taylor Tuesdays.
Mm-hmm.
This is basically about the, you know, he recently aged up from being like, I don't know, 12 or whatever he was to, what is he, probably around 18 now?
I think he's in his early 20s, maybe.
Yeah. Oh, I thought he was like, I thought he was still a teenager.
No, because he was like going undercover in high school.
Oh, is he still
I think he's like 18.
Okay, all right.
But whatever the case is, he's older than he had been for a little while when he was teaming up with Damian and stuff. Mm-hmm. Although Damian does show up in this, I believe, and they have a cool convo. But yeah, this is about what it's like to be Superman's son and to sort of also have his father out of the picture and be trying to come into his own and to do things differently from his dad. I thought that was the coolest thing, the through line of the whole series was how he's never like dad sucked, but he is like, I have to do this my way, and I know he would want me to, and he was supportive when I was doing that before. And you see, he very much does. His approach to Luther and any given threat is different, but always informed by what his dad mm-hmm. did. Like, it's really cool. They never punk out classic Clark.
It's the first 6 issues of the series, so
it's super good.
Yeah.
And then Firepower Hardcover, which is the original graphic novel and first 12 issues, so it's essentially 18 issues.
Oh, wow.
Of Firepower, which is the Robert Kirkman sort of kung fu superpowered epic with amazing Chris Samnee artwork. This is an oversized hardcover. I've been waiting for this one to check it out and read the whole thing.
Is it set in the present?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Let me know how it reads as a whole, Randy, because I kind of feel like I might want to check into that. Yeah. I always love Samnee's art. Robert Kirkman's a little more hit and miss for me as a writer, but it's such a cool premise that I dig that.
And then I guess that's it for comics for the week.
Yep.
So we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back and talk about Obi-Wan and Rescue Rangers and Top Gun Maverick. All right, so we're going to offer up some spoiler thoughts on a few things. We're going to start with Obi-Wan, then we're going to talk about Chippendale's Rescue Rangers, the new one, and then we're going to talk about Top Gun Maverick. We'll do individual spoiler warnings for each one, and we're starting off with Obi-Wan. So if you have not watched the first 2 episodes, we're about to talk about it.
Yeah, this is full spoiler mode on all of them.
Yep.
So, Obi-Wan, I think, Dave, you may be the most excited in the room about this.
Maybe so. Nick, where'd you land on it?
I loved it.
Oh, maybe not.
That might be a little higher than I was. Because, so, here's the thing, is the lesson I learned with The Mandalorian was watch the full thing of whatever they open up with. Because, you know, I watched half of Mandalorian, and I was like, it's okay. Yeah. And then all the best stuff with, like, Nick Nolte's character, Taika Waititi's character, the Baby Yoda, that was all in the back half. And when I saw that, I was like, oh, that was pretty cool. So, same here. It's a 2-parter. I found the first one a little sluggish, and I was like, it's fine, but I'm not going to watch this show. And because, like, they did actually, I think they wanted it to be kind of the pace it was, which is emphasizing that Obi-Wan had in his life as, like, as this kind of hermit who needed to stay below the radar, he's essentially working like a meatpacking plant.
Yeah, and he keeps hiding meat in his coat.
What was the deal with that?
I thought he was feeding the other Jedi.
No, he was feeding his animal.
Oh, he's feeding his animal, right.
Yeah.
That's the noise my head makes when a revelation hits me.
Yeah, he was feeding his... That animal has a name. It showed up in, I think, either The Mandalorian or Episode 1.
He was feeding his animal. Okay.
Yeah, he was feeding...
I somehow missed that, too.
It's akin to, like, a camel.
No, that makes sense. I guess I did realize that. When I first saw him doing it, I thought he was, like, feeding the Jedi. I thought he was doing that.
And the weird thing about that is I kept thinking he was going to get caught, and he would have to do something kind of like...
Yeah, that's the thing. They showed him doing it, like, 3 or 4 times, like, putting it away, and I was like, why did they do
that? So here's the thing is, like, this is almost what I was getting to, is that I think they wanted it to be a little slow and repetitious. They want you to see he goes in, he does this drudge work job, he's not enjoying himself, and every day he takes some home for his pet, his horse.
Yep.
And so we know he's still a good person, but the repetition, it's like, you know, sometimes they'll do that repetition in a movie or a story just to emphasize that, like, the drudgery of it. And so I kind of felt that, but I also thought it was a little too slow, even as I was fascinated, because that first episode is like, oh, he is going to get called on a mission that is not on Tatooine.
Yeah.
I want to, like,
go ahead.
Do the kind of a mirror version of what you're saying. Is that is drudgery and all this, but it's also, that's his life. He basically, this is him, he's given up being a Jedi. He is no longer following that path.
And they juxtapose it with a Jedi who's on the run there.
Yeah.
Who's like...
Who's still trying to be a Jedi.
That he's still trying to be like a good deed doer. He's still trying to right wrongs. and Obi-Wan is like, the radar. He's like, stop it.
Well, at first he's like, you have me confused with somebody else. I'm not that person. Blah, blah, blah. Just leave me alone.
Yep.
he's kind of a curmudgeonly bastard in a lot of ways.
Well, that's what his future is.
Yeah. Arguably, his inaction to help this guy got this guy killed.
Yeah.
And I liked that they kind of embraced the darkness of that. There's also something, some dark stuff in the second episode in particular, and I like that they're embracing that because, Nick, you and I'd say, of the three of us here, definitely like the prequels, find the most to enjoy in the prequels in this room. Randy, you pretty much all hate all the time on the prequels.
I hate all the prequels, yes.
But, Nick, wouldn't you agree that like some of the best stuff in there is Obi-Wan as investigator?
Yeah.
He's looking into Kamino. He's hunting down leads and stuff like that. He's sneaking around. He's looking in libraries.
I mean, arguably, the Revenge of the Sith, that like that kind of stuff that he does is... Was it the second one or the third one where he does all that investigation?
It's I think, starts in the second one because he's investigating the clone facility.
Oh, right. He's doing the whole Jango thing.
It takes him there.
And I also want to back up just slightly. I thought the Previously On was one of the smartest things to do in this first episode.
Just cut together a bunch of the prequels?
Cut together some of the...
story of like the key moments of the prequels.
But it's like some of the best scenes out of the prequels, sort of kind of punctuating Obi-Wan and Anakin's relationship.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is really smart.
You know what's funny is I know somebody who his girlfriend watched it and was like confused by that. Like it was like too much story. She's not a big Star Wars person, like knows it but like not super well, and was just like, what? It's just like you just get a lot of story
you
in
did.
5 minutes.
It was a lot. It was a lot of info.
But yes, I like that quite a bit. It like it set up the pain of the Obi-Wan Anakin rift, which kind of comes to fruition in the second episode. And by the way, the reason I brought up the investigation stuff is that it kind of is a bit of a noir vibe.
Yeah,
and noir traditionally goes to some darker places than Star Wars tends to. Star Wars tells darker war stories, but it's not noir usually. And this kind of veered a little closer to that, and definitely like in the second episode.
Yeah.
But for noir, you need sometimes a morally compromised hero, or like that's what they often, the stories they like to tell.
So the first episode also introduced us to young Leia, which I did not know that was happening.
I didn't either. I think they kept that secret on purpose.
Well, I knew Jimmy Smits was going to be in this, so I knew Bail Organa was going to show up.
I figured Bail Organa would be like, you know, he's a resistance guy.
Yeah.
Right,
but far the resistance is kind of just fledgling.
Yeah, no, this is not about the rebellion. This is about a like solo mission for everyone.
I think it ultimately might be the start of it.
Yeah, maybe.
So that's the thing is that wasn't really revealed is that young Leia, who's she's like what 10, I think they say,
yeah, like 8 or 10,
gets kidnapped by Flea from the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
That's true.
We're playing a little creepy piece of shit.
Here's the thing about that. I was on vacation, so I didn't get to watch this ultimately. And then, randomly, when I was on the plane, I started seeing people talk about Flea. And I was like, what the hell
is... How is Flea in the news?
Yeah. What is Flea trending?
Did Flea die? I don't...
No, Flea captured Princess Leia. It's on all the newspapers.
You know what? Flea actually also caused Marty McFly to get into an accident that ruined his hands.
It's true.
Flea has done a lot of damage in the sci-fi
And it wouldn't
world.
Be newspapers. It would be holocrons.
Bail Organa comes to Obi-Wan and asks him for his help. He's like, one last mission kind of thing. And Obi-Wan... very reluctantly agrees to go.
Yeah.
What is it that convinces him? I don't even remember.
Well, Jimmy Smith's like call. He and his wife called to tell him this, and that, you know, is like imploring him to do to go after her. You're the only person who can do it, and he's like, no, sorry, I'm out.
But then, like, Bail actually goes there.
He actually shows up to the cave where Obi-Wan is living.
Yep.
Like punctuates that Leia is just as important as Luke is.
You know what's interesting is that Leia, when we see her, she sends a message in the very first Star Wars movie, Episode 1, but Episode 4.
You fought with my father in the Clone Wars.
Yeah, but she also is like, "You're General Kenobi. You're my only, your only hope." And this is how she knew him.
Yeah, I was like, "This is very smart."
This is that she. I mean, this is where she met Obi-Wan Kenobi,
right.
Which I like. That's a cool little bit of plug-in continuity. I like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The getting off Tatooine, I think, was one of their best ideas.
Oh, absolutely.
One of the things I didn't like about the series, and even, like, the logo looks like it. Like, you see Obi-Wan's name, and it, like, flashes away in the sand. It looks all craggy. And they're like, oh, this is going to be about him protecting Luke. And I'm like, that could be good. I'm sure they'll come up with a good story. I'm just not feeling it.
Like Anakin, you don't like sand.
And instead, he's immediately called off world to, like, a series of, like, there's a bunch of stuff you see on Alderaan with her family and her kind of resisting growing up to with the political life.
Mm-hmm.
And she's kind of precocious and, like, yeah, she's brassy in the way
she loves
Leia
droids.
Is. Yeah, she's got a cool little droid of her own.
You
too.
See C-3PO in the background for one scene.
Yep. But, like, second episode takes her to the planet where she's being held, which is a scary Blade Runner planet where, like, when he's there, he sees homeless clone veterans, kids selling spice, a.k.a. drugs.
Mm-hmm. So that whole homeless clone veteran thing is darker than you can imagine. Because that specific clone trooper is wearing 501st armor, who is actually under Anakin's control.
Oh, man.
That was one of the people who slaughtered younglings.
Yeah, yeah.
That he gave money to.
Yeah.
It's super dark and super sad because those were his friends, too.
Right.
I mean...
Let's talk a little bit about Ewan McGregor's acting and stuff like that. I'll be honest. Like, I thought he was doing fine in the first episode, but I thought the second episode, because it called for deeper emotional stakes, was like, that was what I had hoped to see.
Yeah.
When that clone trooper is just, like, asking for change... or some, like, spare a credit, and you see this look on his face as, you know, what surely all those thoughts are going through his head. That's going on, and, of course, he finds out a big secret about Anakin. He literally did not know he had survived until...
Yeah. Well, and if you take that into account, he is, like, giving money to his best friend's troops that he thinks he's slaughtered.
Yeah.
Or he slaughtered Anakin. And left him for dead.
Yeah.
And it's just...
Yeah, they
it's kind of messed up.
Especially that first episode, but throughout, he is playing as having pretty severe PTSD.
Yeah. Yep. There is some Star Wars lightness. His banter with Leia and stuff like that is definitely tinged with lightness. Kamal Nanjiani's
a fake Jedi was so good.
Yep.
Maybe my favorite part of it overall, and when I first saw him... Like, you immediately twig to the fact that this guy is a con man.
Yeah.
And that's actually really dark, though, because at first I didn't know he was actually trying to, in some way, he was fleecing people of their money, but he was trying to get them, like, off-planet.
Yeah, he's helping, but for a price.
Right. I thought he was just taking the money at first.
It's a very Han Solo-esque kind of thing.
Yeah, and he's doing the, like, when they're talking to him, they're like, thank you for doing this, and he's like... I must follow the Jedi code and all this.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
Oh, it's so awful. And then, like, Kenobi, of course, knows what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, in the tradition of Han Solo, also, he is a halfway decent person, or he's trying to be in on a planet that's a piece of shit. I really like the aesthetics of that world. I already forgot the name of it, but whatever it is.
Yeah, I forget it too.
I'm sure we'll hear more of it in Star Wars stories to come. But it definitely does seem as a friend called it, the Blade Runner of Star Wars.
Very much so. Very kind of bleak place with open air markets that are congested with all kinds of teeming with alien life.
Yep, they're like he goes undercover. In what is clearly a drug lab that looks like those drug labs where you have to wear like a mask and stuff because like they're cooking PCP or whatever.
Yep.
And there's like, you know,
the girl who gives him the spice are kind of like, that's his own daughter. That's Ewan McGregor's daughter.
Oh, geez. I thought you were saying it was like supposed to be Obi-Wan's daughter. And like,
no. But that
what
is
did I miss?
That is actually Ewan McGregor's daughter, which I thought was really fun.
She had a little bit of, I don't know if this was intentional, but she looked a little like Ziggy Stardust.
Yeah, she did.
But that's pretty cool, actually. But that was actually one of the darkest things. Yeah. I was like, I don't know how old she was, but she looked like she was like, I don't know, 14 or 16 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, she's selling drugs.
It gives this kind of veneer to the sort of spice trade of like really dark, dark stuff.
It had been casually mentioned in Star Wars, but rarely like did they kind of like evoke the darker edges of like drug empires and cartels. The way you could if you wanted to. Mm-hmm. But this looks like it may at times.
Yeah.
She, like, gives him a free sample and stuff, which he later uses to cool effect
when they capture him. Flea got high.
Yes. he also, by the way, is not fighting with a lightsaber in any of this. He is punching people.
Mm-hmm.
Shooting them and stuff like that. And I was like, man, this is pretty hardcore, Obi-Wan.
Yeah, because you don't need to throw a lightsaber around right now.
Can we talk about the Inquisitors?
Yeah, let's talk about the Inquisitors.
Yep.
So two of them are from Rebels.
Yes. Grand Inquisitor and Fifth Brother.
Yep.
The way that they get simply described in this, and I haven't seen Rebels, so you can, guys can tell me if this is accurate, is just that they are hunting down Jedi who've escaped the net.
Well, they are former Jedi, right?
They are former Jedi who've turned against the Force and have sort of embraced the dark side. Oh. And they have been chosen by Vader as sort of his elite task force in destroying the Jedi.
The dark opening to this whole show was they show some Padawan kids who are training when Order 66 comes down and, like, clone troopers just come in and, like, start killing people. And, like, their master is trying to escape and, like, their teacher with them. And he gets, or she gets gunned down.
She sacrificed to protect them.
Yeah, and you see like it happening all over the school grounds. Essentially,
it's harrowing.
And I assume one of the girls in there is the Inquisitor girl.
I think so.
There was a young black girl, and I was like, that must be her.
I did not catch that when I first originally watched it, but I saw that you had brought it up in your Facebook post, and I was like, oh, that makes a ton of sense.
What's her name? Reva.
Yeah,
and she is like bitterly has a lot of bitter hatred of Obi-Wan.
But we don't 100% know why.
Right, like, was he supposed to be there that day, and he could have, like, protected her friends,
but
who knows?
Also, I thought it was really interesting of the kind of banter and sort of, like biting forth back and forth between the Inquisitors.
Yeah.
Like, I expect them to be sort of in line with the Grand Inquisitor and, like, follow orders, and, like...
Bad guys are usually monolithic in Star Wars. They have a goal, catch the good guys, destroy the rebellion, whatever. And here there is disagreement. She is a wild card among them.
She is.
Yeah.
She's ruthless.
By the way, among other dark things, like that one Jedi dying and being strung up in the marketplace.
Well, she's sort of advocating for, like, murder at every turn, and even, like, the Fifth Brother is like, no, we should just give money. We should just try to get these people through greed.
Right. They're a little more by the book, like, kind of like, the Empire would probably like, they want to run things orderly, right?
Yeah.
That's their goal. They don't want chaos and uprisings and martyrs and things like that, and she doesn't give a crap. I thought she was pretty scary.
She's very scary. But I also thought the Grand Inquisitor was scary in his own way. I mean, he was, like, his, like, monologue at the bar at Tatooine, sort of like Jedi cannot help but hunt themselves by doing the right thing.
Surely reminiscent in some ways of the dude in, what's the Tarantino movie? Inglourious Bastards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Who's the actor?
Christoph Waltz.
Yeah. He had that creepy, assured self-confidence sort of thing.
Yeah.
There's also, by the way, a really good scene, I thought, with... is it him or... No, it's her who is, like, on the verge of killing Owen.
Yeah.
Uncle Owen.
Yes.
Owen Lars.
Yeah.
Who does not like Obi-Wan at all.
No. And has, a great takedown of Obi-Wan in a lot of ways.
What did he say?
He was like... Oh, so you want to train him just like you trained his father?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, yeah. Well.
Yeah. And you know what?
I'll train you, too.
Obi-Wan's bitterness is a little bit understandable.
Well,
he's in a shit situation.
Yeah. It also paints Owen in a better...
Did I say Obi-Wan? I meant Owen.
It also paints Owen in a better light in a lot of ways. Because in Episode 4, he was just kind of...
He's the guy standing away of Luke's heroic journey.
Yeah, and this...
He's grumpy dad.
You see a different aspect of him of trying to protect Luke in a way.
Right.
Even from, you know, Obi-Wan, who's essentially the good guy, but trying to protect him, his son. So it was nice to see that.
Mm-hmm. So let's quick talk about how it ends. It we see... he learns that Anakin is still alive and that he is Darth Vader. Maybe he'd heard of Darth Vader, but didn't know that they were the same person.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there's some really good facial acting, I think, from Ewan McGregor as he processes this, and it kind of like looks kind of like a broken man.
Yep.
And then there's, we briefly glimpse Hayden Christensen in the, like, sort of...
In the back-to-tank.
The back-to-tank or whatever, yeah. You have her with, like, kind of tech and stuff like that, but, like... But a different view than we've usually seen.
Yeah.
We've seen Vader without the helmet before, but, like, not quite this. Clearly they're going to be, you know, breaking some new ground visually as to how he might appear and what they're going to show us. And I thought there was a pretty good wait there. Again, it was because they had set up that Clone Wars, you know, we were supposed to, you know, we were brothers, you were supposed to save us, all of that stuff.
And I was pretty well hooked at that point.
Well, yeah, and also the hook of the prospect of meeting up with some rebels that are already that come on Geo City. There's people who will help you.
Yeah,
And I'm that kind of like, who could that be? There's like so many people.
Yep.
That they could bring in.
Kamal Nanjiani, we didn't see it, but he surely was killed by Reva.
No, he wasn't. Reva left him.
Oh, interesting. So he's still alive?
She slams him into the wall and thinks about killing him, and then he's just like, you're not even a Jedi, you're not worth my time.
Right. Interesting. And so we'll probably see him again.
I would imagine you will. He'll show up again.
Nice.
I really enjoyed it. I thought they did a great job.
Yeah, well, once again, I've got hooked by a Star Wars show that I didn't really want to watch. We'll see if it drops the ball or anything, but, like, I did think that some of the writing was just a little bit sort of average at times.
Agreed.
There were some scenes that were pretty good and intense, and then others where I was like, meh.
I was trying to think of the director's name.
Although I've actually seen a lot of friends who really like young Leia, like, that's, like, the main thing that they like, even, sometimes. But I thought her acting was a little hammy. Like a lot of kid actors. It's tough.
Okay, so this... Deborah Chow is the director of this, of Obi-Wan. And she did a couple of episodes of Mandalorian.
Okay, yeah.
But I also thought it was interesting that Ewan McGregor, like, executive produced this as well. So he definitely had a hand in it. Yeah, thing. Kind of a personal thing. He's been wanting to do this forever.
Okay.
So, I'm excited. But I'm excited by most Star Wars.
Are you
going to
watch it?
What, Obi-Wan?
Yeah.
Did you enjoy it?
I know you're a little bit.
I liked it. I'm not as into it as you guys are. I don't think it's.
Hate bearded heroes.
I hate bearded heroes. I think my favorite part of it was the Kamal Nanjiani stuff. I think Obi-Wan. I like Ewan McGregor, and I like the. I think for the most part, I'm like, I don't know that I need more of Obi-Wan's story, and I think they're doing interesting stuff with it. But I'm not as plugged into it as
well. What's weird
if
is
it
that
had just been him protecting Luke on Tatooine, then I would have felt that way. But they shook it up enough for me that I felt like
well,
it's
what's
a
weird is that
game.
That is
it's a
Obi-Wan's
galaxy
story.
Hopping thing. Actually,
yeah. I mean Obi-Wan is just there to protect, and we don't get much
right.
nuance and
I
backstory.
I think
this
is going this to
character.
Be his big off-world adventure. Probably his like is this a short show? Like
six episodes.
That's
oh,
it.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, and then there's not a season two planned?
I might do. We'll see.
It depends on how well it does, but for all
they've certainly
I know,
got enough other stuff going on that they wouldn't need to do it.
Yeah.
But
it's a good
I like
premise.
The idea that this is his one big adventure, and then he goes back to, like, protecting Luke or whatever.
Well, and then he's got his episode. There's an episode with Obi-Wan and Rebels, where he sort of has his final confrontation with Maul.
But and that's prior to this, right?
Nope. So the Grand Inquisitor that he shows back up in Rebels, he's not dead at the end of this Obi-Wan. Reva stabs
like
him in his stomach, but he recovers.
Okay,
he is right. Not dead.
Okay, I thought that he was dead, and that's
no.
Not the continuity. What it where?
Interesting.
I think that would be a step over the line, and I think Vader would just kill her if he did that. I was just sort of circumventing that line by taking him out and trying to get to Obi-Wan. Vader can
you know, talking about just real quick about like stuff that fits in with existing continuity, like Leia, you know, General Kenobi, and that stuff. They Vader fighting. We know that there's going to be a rematch between Vader and Obi-Wan in this at some point. They promoted it as such. I don't know how it's going to happen.
Yeah,
but
I'm
it is
curious.
One of those things that'll make it. You know, like when they meet in A New Hope or whatever, he's like, you know, when you met, I was but a learner. Now I am the master. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, that's not going to quite seem so much like the case. I don't know how they'll do it, if it's going to feel awkward, like,
right,
oh.
This is the fourth time we've met.
Right.
I think they'll do it in an interesting way. And I don't know if it'll be a straight-up confrontation between the two, like
right.
A lightsaber battle.
For all we
I
know,
think...
this could be some weird mental, you know, battle
right.
Or something like that.
And I think they'll do something smart. I don't think they're going to want
to,
like, upturn... continuity.
They've mostly
to the
made
extent.
pretty good decisions, so we shall see.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about Chippendale's Rescue Rangers.
God, I remember Dave telling me about this trailer, and he was like, you need to watch this bonkers trailer, and I never did.
Oh, you didn't watch it?
And I'm kind of
either.
I'm kind of glad I didn't, because I was
sounded
like,
dumb.
It sounded stupid.
It sounded really dumb. And then some friends of mine started talking about it.
Yeah.
I mean, here's the thing. What we knew is it was John Mulaney and Andy Samberg, and there was the Lonely Island guys.
Yeah.
And so...
Yeah, I was weirded out that the trailer to me looked so dopey, given that it was Lonely Island. Also, by the way, like, Chip and Dale, like, it wasn't, like, an amazing show. It probably wasn't quite as good as DuckTales, but it was in that ballpark.
Yeah.
And it was, like, a good kids' adventure show. And the trailer for this, it was, like, it looked like, oh, they're gonna do, like, them as, like, some sort of expose of Hollywood as lensed by the actor Chipmunks who portrayed Chip and Dale or something like that.
That's the premise.
I was like, that sounds stupid. And, like, you know, they'd had so much good success with DuckTales.
I think on the surface that sounds stupid, but in actuality,
right? I've heard mostly good things. Yeah, so you guys tell me what it's like.
You compared it, and I think correctly. You know, I've seen it compare this to Roger Rabbit.
Yeah, it's this generation's Roger Rabbit. Yeah. It has that much.
So there are cartoon actors.
Yes. And for everyone.
I mean, in the opening scene where they're showing, is it the Chip and Dale's rap party they're showing?
Yes.
Because they show Paul Abdul and Scat Cat.
Yep.
Like that. So that is in the first 5 minutes.
Blaster from the Transformers shows up at one point.
Wow.
There are so many Easter eggs. Wonder Woman walks by for some weird reason.
But it is a crime story. This is the comedy, action comedy stuff that I like so much. Like, this is not unlike Beverly Hills Cop or one of those. It's just the Hapsis Jar.
Basically is the story of Chip and Dale becoming friends in school and then going on to doing Rescue Rangers, and then is it Dale who is the screw up?
I can't remember
it has to be he wants to do his James Bond spoof cartoon, which inevitably he goes to pilot for that. Rescue Rangers gets canceled, and that one doesn't make it past the pilot, so they're all screwed.
And they both become has-been.
Chip goes on to be like an insurance salesman.
He goes on to be a very successful insurance salesman, and Dale goes on to get the CGI plastic surgery.
And they both get called.
Is on the con circuit.
By the way, if I'm not mistaken, I realized after only recently that by having one CG and one traditionally animated, it actually becomes very easy to tell apart.
Well, and like at the convention, his booth is by what? Tigra from Marvel?
Tigra from Marvel, but also Ugly Sonic.
An Ugly Sonic.
That is to say, before fans made the Sonic the Hedgehog people change the effects look.
Ugly Sonic has quite the role in this, actually.
The human teeth Sonic. Yeah. I was just like, oh my god,
It's like every convention you've ever been to where it's like all the has-been actors from sci-fi. I mean, they made fun of this. The thing is, none of this is new. We've seen all of this before, but it's all done very cleverly and very fun.
Yes.
It's a noir story. Basically, cartoons are disappearing and getting re-CGI'd and then put into knockoffs in China. It's like human trafficking, but for cartoons.
That is the weirdest concept. It does sound pretty good. Like, the reason I kind of want to see it. I didn't know it was a crime thing.
Yeah,
the reason the Chip and Dale are involved is that Monterey Jack.
I was going to ask if Monterey Jack or Gadget showed up.
Gadget just showed up.
The little bug.
The little bug. I don't want to give away, but the little bug thing that was great. The voice they got for it was amazing.
It was amazing.
Is
it Danny DeVito?
No,
it's okay. You would never guess it. You will never guess it. It's amazing. I honestly feel like this is the kind of thing. Pulp noir type stuff.
Yeah.
If you were describing this, if you took the cartoon aspect of it all together and you were like, what is this about? Well, a couple of washed up actors wind up having to become unlicensed private eyes to find their friend who's gone missing in a human trafficking operation.
Yep.
That is a description of what this movie's about.
Right.
It just happens to be Chip, Dale, and Monterey Jack are the characters. Yep.
And summon some pretty notable villains.
They also they have run-ins with the cops who don't like them investigating this case. One of the cops is a very obvious knockoff Gumby called Captain Putty, voiced by J.K. Simmons.
Yep.
The other cop is Kiki Lane from Nope.
Yeah, yeah.
She is playing a human detective who's like being belittled by her boss, who helps out the Rescue Rangers. Monterey Jack is voiced by Eric Bana in maybe his best role ever. they sort of wind up going undercover trying to figure out who's running this CGI kidnapping ring.
I laughed more than I was expecting.
It's really fun, and there's a ton of good references. So one of the places they go early on, I don't want to give away the whole thing, but one of the places they go early on when they're looking for him is the seedy, uncanny valley. Where all Seth Rogen voices a warrior Viking and no one can tell what he's looking at.
It's like those dead eyes. Are they looking?
Well, so they actually have like intentionally bad CG going on there.
Well, I think they outright say like the Polar Express animation or...
Polar Express was the most famous Uncanny Valley.
This is actually super fun, and it's full of in-jokes. Like, I could definitely rewatch this and find all the different in-jokes again.
And if you have Disney Plus, you have it for free.
Yeah.
I really suggest watching it. Your kids are going to love it.
Is it like a
PG
movie?
I don't know that it would be for kids. That's the thing. I feel like the inside references are going to make it go over the heads of a lot of kids.
Yeah, but a lot of them are super recognizable.
I guess.
Also, kids kind of like, precocious kids kind of like to sort of feel in on it, even if they're not 100% in on it.
Yeah, I get that.
And so I suspect that'll probably go over well among them. There's probably still some hijinks and people falling down, right?
I will say Roger Rabbit does make an appearance in the first, like, 3 minutes.
It is rated PG, Dave, just to answer your question. Yeah,
so
there is
who all
a,
do they, like, so this is like a cross-pollination of animation studios? This is like Disney and Warner Brothers? And
it,
is there
I mean,
Warner Brothers
I know
stuff?
Wonder Woman shows up.
Wonder Woman's in there. That means it's Warner Brothers. How did that happen?
I have no idea. Seth Rogen has played so many different characters. All of his characters show up in one scene.
Yeah, which is
like Monster vs. Aliens, and
yeah, we were talking about the making of this, and it had to be basically a bunch of lawyers in a room, so just like, okay, yeah, you can have this character for 2 minutes.
Which I will say should not work.
Mm-hmm.
This movie shouldn't work.
I think it's probably one of those things where they must have been like had like a really good little demo reel or something like that, or like a little something to like whet the appetite, mm-hmm. so that everybody was probably like, this will boost our character's profile.
Mm-hmm.
It made them feel like it would be overall a win. The same way they probably pitched Roger Rabbit stuff to a lot of people.
Yeah. It's really fun. I definitely recommend it.
All right. So y'all like the baby cartoon. Got it.
Yep. all right. And Dave and I went and saw Top Gun Maverick.
Yep. I don't know if people have been listening to the word, but the buzz has been like crazy good on this.
It's 97% on Rotten Tomatoes.
I wasn't sure I wanted to see this because I like Top Gun. But, you know, it's Tony Scott's gone. And I actually wasn't sure I wanted to see this. The director, Joseph Kaczynski, has done Tron Legacy.
The most forgettable movie ever.
Correct.
And not a lot.
I somehow like saw it like 6 months ago, and I already can't tell you what happened.
I watched it in the store just a few weeks ago, and I don't remember much.
But his next thing after this is that Spider-Head with Chris Hemsworth. So maybe Tron Legacy was just nobody could have made it work. But anyway... there was such good buzz on it.
Yep.
That we finally went and saw it. And I do think the buzz is overhyping it, don't you think?
Absolutely. Like, so here's the thing, is I got a vibe from that buzz that there was, like, something really original about this. I've saw a number of views say it's better than the original, it's got something to say or whatever, and I'm like, it is actually extremely nostalgic for the original.
Mm-hmm.
Recreates about a dozen scenes from it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like you're going to see him riding his bike while a plane flies by. You're going to see, you know, him driving up to on his motorcycle to the house of a girlfriend.
Is there a bar scene where they sing?
There are several bar scenes, a bar features.
And sometimes they'll upend a little bit or flip something like that. And even I feel like the emotional stakes are the same roughly as they were, which is to say... can these hotshot pilots get along? Slightly different, but and it's still about him overcoming his grief about Goose.
Yeah,
which I actually, I don't know, I found a little hokey. Now that all that said,
well, Miles Teller plays Goose's son, right?
Yes, and he's great. Miles Teller. Now
who's Miles Teller?
He's Rooster.
Who is Miles Teller, the actor?
His code name is Rooster.
Yes, his code name is Rooster.
Of course,
it is. But he was the thing I saw most recently is the thing, The Offer, I was telling you about, where it's the making of The Godfather.
Yeah,
and he plays the sort of super producer who made it.
Oh, okay.
Or the sort of not the new producer who made it, and he's great in that too. The thing we know him before, previously, he was Reed Richards in that awful Fantastic Four movie.
Oh, okay,
he's been in a lot.
Yeah.
Now, this is a pretty good kind of blockbuster, you know, fun to see at the theater,
mm-hmm.
a movie with a lot of great flight scenes in it. The sort of, you know, Tom Cruise as a slightly more nuanced guy, but who's still he's still the hotshot, but now he's got to like sort of whip a group of hotshots into shape. I didn't know what the story was, by the way. This minor spoilers here, Nick. But there's a specific mission. They have like a short window, like 3 weeks or something like that, to train a team. They're trying to take out this like uranium production facility.
Uranium enrichment facility. It's in the middle of this mountain, so they got like go under the radar.
A nebulous enemy.
Yeah, the nebulous
enemy. They do
but,
not name who it is.
But they've got like it's got surface to air missiles, which are radar guided. So they have to go under the radar, pop up over the mountain, drop into the mountain, hit the thing, and then drop back out of the mountain.
And it's a very narrow window because they know that they'll scramble fighters.
Oh, you mean
fifth generation fighters. You're going to hear that phrase about 20 times in the movie to remind you that the bad guys actually have better planes than the good guys.
This is, by the way, this is very, very Larry Hama G.I. Joe to me. The time they mentioned fifth-generation fighters and all the, like, we were talking, if you had a friend or somebody who's like, this isn't as much of a Navy propaganda film as Top Gun. Yes, it is. It's absolutely a Navy propaganda movie.
Well, I think they're circumventing it a little bit by actually having a story. like a mission statement. Yeah. The first Top Gun movie, there's no real story. Yeah, there is like a weird kind of thing, and then at the end, there's an event where they have
a story about like a guy who's like all.
But there's not like a big mission. Literally, right. There's a sort of training thing going through the Top Gun program, and then at the end, there is an event where they have to go up against some mix.
I actually think the original one is more nuanced.
Huh, okay. Really?
I do, because I think that, like, I think Kelly McGillis's character felt a little bit more real, and like the camaraderie with Goose and stuff like that felt very real. Like I think it was. I think the first one is a better movie.
I
want to
be friends
with
Anthony Edwards. I mean, he's great.
but like, yeah, this is like, I like the sort of the class in there. There's a very clear kind of Tom Cruise analog guy who like somewhere between Tom Cruise and Iceman.
Yeah, but
from
he's
the original
Hangman.
Is that?
It's Glenn Powell.
Yeah, Glenn Powell.
I don't recognize him from anything. So,
that
was telling Nick, or that was telling Dave. I don't remember most of these actors. Like, I see them, and I'm like, I just now realized Manny Jacinto is one of the pilots. Manny Jacinto is Jason from The Good Place.
Oh, okay.
And he's Fritz. I don't remember that at all.
What's his name?
Fritz. I think he's one of the smaller pilots.
Okay, yeah, I didn't.
Big guys.
I didn't quite spot him in there.
And Jennifer Connelly plays the new love interest, I would imagine.
And she was unrecognizable to me. I did not recognize that was Jennifer Connelly.
Oh, really?
I did. To me, yeah, it looks like Jennifer Connelly does now.
But anyway, yeah, she plays a love interest who they introduced as basically he and they had a fling.
An on again, off again.
Yeah.
And she's got a daughter now, and the daughter is like, hey, don't break mom's heart again.
Yeah. Are Ed Harris and John Hamm the new Tom Skerritt, Michael Ironside?
No, Ed Harris is early on, he's the guy who basically grounds him.
Okay.
Ground him. And then John Hamm is the head of the Top Gun flight school who basically reluctantly gets him into the air.
John Hamm is kind of in the role of the Tom Skerritt.
He kind of is,
they have to yell at him sometimes, but then sometimes they're like, you're a hell of a pilot.
Well, I love John Hamm, so I'll probably watch it.
Yeah, he has only a bit part, really.
That's
I didn't think he had a heavy part in this. But honestly, a lot of this is on the charm of Tom Cruise, who's still very charming, and you buy his whole arc. I think
you do find like bits and pieces. Like you're gonna find out early on, like what he's been up to. They have to call him back to the Top Gun school, and I guess I won't specifically say what it is, but he's still doing stuff for them. And interestingly, in a kind of a decent bit of realism, they said like he's the only person to shoot down like 3 MiGs. It's like they don't make out that there were like tons and tons of battles. And then, like, what's his name? One of the other pilots is the only other person in, like, the last 20 years or something like
that. To have had an air-to-air kill.
To have had an air-to-air kill. Because, yeah, there's not a bunch of air warfare going on.
Right.
And, in fact, that is kind of one of the recurring bits is that Tom Cruise, they're like, is like, we're moving to a drone world and you are going to be...
Kind of antiquated.
You're antiquated, yeah.
I'm surprised they didn't do more with that. Like, it's mentioned and then it's basically dropped.
It gets brought up once or twice. But he does make it clear. He's like, you know, whether you sink or swim on this mission, Maverick, he's like, you're done. Yeah. Like, he says that kind of stuff a few times.
I thought the opening sequence where he's piloting a plane, they're trying to get to a speed record, was really, really good. The sequence that we probably saw in the theaters, the where he takes down
the push-ups.
The push-ups where he takes down each of the flight was really good. The actual mission was really cool. This was a really fun movie to see in the theater. I don't know that I'll ever rewatch it. But I was glad I saw it in the theater.
So what you're saying is the filming and sort of the action sequences are fun. The movie itself is just okay.
The movie itself is fine.
I think so.
I just don't...
By the way, the action sequence near the end, it went to a stage that... I've never actually seen these movies, but I feel like moved more Iron Eagle than Top Gun.
I was going to bring up Iron Eagle, because yes.
I've never seen Iron Eagle, but my vibe is that it got more Iron Eagle-y.
Yeah, it did.
Like, it would have been hilarious if Louis Gossett Jr. showed up.
Which is not to say it wasn't fun. It kind of...
No, it's super fun.
So I was, as a kid, I was like very kind of into G.I. Joe and a lot of military stuff in the 80s. Mm-hmm. And this obviously informed it. You know, the G.I. Joe plane at the time was an exact, you know, it was a pretty close replica of like Tom Cruise's F-16 or whatever.
F-14. And they do a very clever thing to get it back into the F-14. I actually thought that was one of the better sequences.
Yeah.
It strains credulity beyond everything.
Right. That's the Iron Eagle territory.
Yeah.
But it's not fun.
But it's fun and I don't care.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did it capture any of the Tony Scott-ness of the...
No, it's a different directing style, okay. I think. Although they do, they open with a sequence very similar to how he opens Top Gun.
And in fact, it uses the same opening music. It's one of those things where, that's one of those things where I was like, there's a lot of callbacks.
Tony Scott was great at sort of the frenetic action kind of...
Although this wasn't, it wasn't as frenetic as his later stuff would be.
Yeah.
No, but he still had like the hard cuts and
the air warfare sequences are really good.
Okay.
Like, they're well done. This, if you told me the guy who made the boringest Ultron Legacy made this, I would have been surprised. it is not boring by any means. I actually really enjoyed it. I'm glad I went to see it.
Well, you haven't dissuaded me from seeing it. I will probably end up seeing it.
Did we talk Dave into watching Chippendale's Rescue Rangers?
Maybe.
Right. It's possible.
All right, and I've seen everything.
I still got to... There's so much coming out this week. Yep. I mean, we've got stuff. What?
We've got time with Stranger Things and...
Stranger Things, Boys premieres. Boys. What was the thing that... Oh, Orville starts, today or tomorrow?
Yep, yep.
There's just so much television.
A lot of television. All right, that'll do it for us this week. And until next time,
Yo Joe!
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.